Shalom and welcome again to another edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address. These podcasts are presented to help explore the impact of the longevity revolution on our congregations and our community. And we invite you to visit our website, jewishsacredaging.com, as well as the Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. And we welcome also your comments to me at rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. And if you wish, you can go to that website and click on the voicemail icon and leave us a voicemail message. You can find that again on the homepage. And with great pleasure, we welcome colleagues and friends to today's microphone for Seekers of Meaning, Rabbi David Levin, the director and founder of the Jewish Relationship Initiative, or Initiatives, and Rabbi Simcha Raphael, the founder and director of the Da'at Institute, both located here in the beautiful Delaware Valley. Welcome, guys. Nice to see you.
Always nice to be here.
Great to be with you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for driving all the way over to the wilds of southern New Jersey. And I hope you wasn't too bad. Anyway, we're here to talk about a project that both of you are involved with, something that is sweeping North America.
The world.
And that is the Death Cafe, which the two of you manage, run in several locations here in the greater Philadelphia area. So let's get right to the basics. What's a death cafe?
Death cafe I describe as coffee, cake, and conversations about death. It's an informal evening of conversation that people have open-ended about all aspects of dying and death, and it's part of a national, international phenomena that has been going on for almost a decade now, where people gather together and begin to unpack this rather complex topic that nobody wants to talk about in our culture.
But people are talking about it, right?
As I think people are becoming increasingly exposed to the idea of death as we get older as a population, people find themselves up against it, either confronting it personally or indirectly through people that they know and love. And in our culture, we've tended to avoid these conversations, and yet there are a lot of serious questions that people have. So this gives them a forum to get together in a non-agenda-based kind of a conversation and talk about the things that are interesting.
You facilitate a conversation.
Essentially, that is precisely what
happens. Do you start off with like a teaser question or?
The opportunity, it's interesting. We have a series of teaser questions that we have in order to facilitate conversations.
Right.
But most people come with things that they would like to talk about, and it's open-ended, and we allow that conversation to flow organically.
These last an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours?
90 minutes.
Not fixed. It's 90. At the end of 90 minutes, they say, we're finished?
Yeah. We say thank you and look forward to seeing you the next time.
Baby boomers attend or multi-generational?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah. So technically, we're hosts. We create the space in which people gather together. And they're really non-structured. So what we do is we do a quick intro, who's here, have you been here before? And then we divide into groups of 4 to 6.
Oh, okay.
And we basically say, talk amongst yourselves. So as David said, there are some prompts, some starter questions, but it's really open-ended. And what's been fascinating to me through all these years is the conversation themes are always different. Somebody's talking about a whole series of funeral experiences. Somebody's talking about cleaning out their house, preparing for their own death. Somebody's talking about grief experiences. I love the theme of multicultural conversations around dying and death when there's somebody there from a different culture. There was somebody there from Croatia. There was somebody there from a Native American tradition. And more. And I ask people, you know, tell me a little bit about that. So the themes are always different. David, some of the other themes you've
well,
seen?
I have not had a conversation in the years that we've been doing this. I have not had a conversation that duplicated another conversation. Each one's been unique. Each person comes to the table, again, as Simcha was talking about, in the demographics. We've had doctors. We've had artists. We've had young people. We've had old people. Rich people, poor people, actively dying people, and people who have suffered a loss.
To be clear, this is not a specific Jewish event. It's open to everybody.
It's correct? Completely open to everybody. There are no denominations. There's no ideology. There's no agenda that's being put forth. We don't sell anything.
Do you advertise yourself as rabbis?
No.
No, but I identify myself. Within the conversation, I say, hi, I'm David Levin, Rabbi David Levin, or I'm David Levin, a rabbi. And then the rest of the conversation is, I'm David.
And let's be clear, because we just alluded to this before we went on. This is not a grief support group, is it correct?
Sometimes people come with raw grief, but it's definitely not defined as that. And in fact, part of the description on where we advertise it on something called Meetup, which is everything you ever wanted to know about interesting things to do in the Delaware Valley or all around the country. And we specifically state that it's not a bereavement group. Just your question about it being Jewish.
Yeah.
There is a funeral director in Winnipeg who runs a death cafe that's specifically Jewish. So in some locations, it's being done within a Jewish context. I've said to David, we might want to see if we can get some synagogue to sponsor it. Yeah. But as we do it here in the Philadelphia area, it's not specifically defined as a Jewish program.
The lady in Winnipeg, is that Rena?
Rena.
Okay.
Yeah. You can follow up with Rena.
No, so, I know her. She's on my staff, the Gamliel staff.
Right.
Yeah, she does a great job. Yeah. David alluded to this. You have some repeat customers, correct?
We do. People come back once, twice, three times. Some are actually regulars. I would say less than approximately a third of the
familiar faces
are familiar faces.
And you do this in, because we, like the big one here in Philly is at the Barnes & Noble in Rittenhouse Square, but the location varies. For example, give me some examples of where you hold these.
Go ahead.
We started this. I was involved with somebody else in starting this in September of 2011. We did one in West Philadelphia, and that space was too small. The first time we did it, there had been some local PR, and we're like 35, 40 people. So we did a couple of different venues downtown, and then we settled on Barnes & Noble. And that's been our mainstay location, pretty much. Once a month, except during the summer, except when if it's a holiday weekend and it conflicts. And then David recently started one out on the main line.
Right. We have a second suburban Philadelphia in Bryn Mawr. And we also do one, the third musketeer in our group, Michelle Lasota.
Is
a co-host with us. And she has been spearheading bringing this Death Cafe idea to Roxborough.
Are you in touch with other facilitators around North America who are doing this, or is everybody sort of like making Shabbos on their own, so to speak?
There is a website where one supposedly posts all of their upcoming programs. I don't even know we're current on that.
We are.
So we could see who's doing what where, but David and I, this is sort of our volunteer hobby. This is what we do for a good time in between everything else we're doing.
Well, kidding aside, I mean, Simcha's got a point. I think both do this because we're deriving a tremendous amount from it. The conversations that we have become really informative. People needing to have a conversation, being able to provide that, I'm learning a lot. In the end of life place where most of us, or at least the three of us, spend a lot of our time in doing our rabbinic work. It becomes very informative to help me understand what is really going on with people in this space.
Give me the top three things that you've uncovered in people's conversations. What are the three major themes of all the death cafes that you've done that seem to be recurring in these conversations?
A couple stand out for me. One is somebody who shows up who has a terminal diagnosis, who is always speaking so proactively in an upbeat way about her own process of preparation for her death. She arranged for a bench at a particular funeral, at a particular cemetery. And the death cafe is part of what's called this death positive movement. So when people can be so positive and honest about their own mortality. I think that's very striking.
And for me, it's almost something that follows on the heels of that. People who are left, who are the bereaved, coming to this space to not necessarily get an answer, but to feel as though they're not as isolated and alone as this experience can often make someone feel. That there are other people who get it. There are other people that are empathetic and can hold them in that space. And even if there's a question put out on the table that we don't have an answer to, we can still say, yeah, you know, I get you're grappling with a question that we don't have a good answer to. Let's all sit with this and be caring for each other. It's a wonderful space in that way.
Another moment that comes to mind, a kind of synchronistic connection where somebody was speaking about being of Indigenous Native American tradition and how no one handled her father's death with any traditional rites, and how difficult that was for her and how angry she was. And then about 10 minutes later, somebody who comes in late, and he is from another Indigenous tribe, and he's talking about he does rituals and shamanic kinds of traditions. So it was really important for this woman to connect with him. And so in that moment, there was some other kind of divine unfolding, if you will.
This is from what you said, these cafes also are about community building, aren't they? I'm picking that up. I mean, from what you're saying,
I think the answer is probably yes, and I'll judge that by the number of people that linger after the session is formally concluded. So they'll stay together. They'll continue to talk. I've actively seen people exchange information, emails, and phone numbers. So in some respects, yes, we provide a space for them and a starting point, perhaps, to create another community. And I've met with folks outside of the Death Cafe. The conversations prompted them to reach out and say, hey, listen, based on what you said, I'd love to get together for a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. So I've done a few of those.
Why is this so popular now? What's going on?
Well, people die. And some people are more willing to talk about than others. I think we're living through a time of cultural transformations of attitudes towards dying and death, unlike anything we have ever experienced in the history of humanity. And I want to say that very clearly. In 1900, Sigmund Freud published The Interpretation of Dreams, and he was very intentional about beginning the new century and launching it with this treatise about the transformation of attitudes towards human sexuality. And we're 119 years since then. We've come a long way. We've still got a long way to go. In 1969, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross publishes On Death and Dying, and that launches a process of cultural transformation of attitudes towards dying and death. And we're only 50 years after that. So we're still in the very early stages of a broader cultural transformation. Here in New Jersey, the medical aid dying law just recently passed. In Canada, it's all across the country, in parts of Europe. That alone is going to transform the way in which people are dealing with dying and death. If there's much more a kind of optional choice for self-termination when dealing with terminal illness, that's going to change things. At this point, there's something like 40% of all Americans die in hospice. Unfortunately, most of them only get there in the last 48 to 72 hours. But the hospice movement, the Green Burial movement, the Death Cafe movement, the more family involvement in funerals, all of that is part of this broader transformation. And the millennials who show up at our death cafes, they're not there because a parent has died or because a friend has committed suicide. Often that brings people. They're there because they're certainly curious and willing to talk about it. And they're much more open and less culturally uptight about dying and death. So I think the millennials are also kind of curious about this whole thing.
And I think also culturally, the pendulum is swinging back. As a society, we had tended to remove death. We've professionalized the death and dying process. We put people into hospitals. We segregated the dying off, whereas it used to be a very intensely personal experience. We've culturally in we did it in the home, and culturally we've depersonalized this intensely personal experience. And I think we are, as a race or as a species, beginning to realize that we need that connection, that separating us from it wasn't quite the way to go. So we're finding a return that the natural curiosities as to part of this very, well, it's common to us all, actually. So people are seeking answers to questions or being able to at least sit with it as opposed to shunting it off to some other place.
Well, certainly the public media is starting to react to it. I mean, I've seen a lot more in media, social, not social media, but movies, TV stuff, starting to deal with the realities of death and dying as opposed to the fantasies of death and dying. And certainly some new books. I just finished this book by a woman by the name of Louise Aronson called Elderhood. And she talks about the medicalization of dying and really what you're talking about the separation, et cetera, et cetera. I'm fascinated by in your conversations with people who come to the death cafes. And again, we're talking with Rabbi David Levin, who's the director and the founder of the Jewish Relationship Initiatives, and Rabbi Simcha Raphael, the founder and director of the Da'at Institute. I'm going to get your websites in a minute, but the idea of choice and on the concept of personal autonomy. There was earlier this month, there was a piece in the science section of the New York Times by Jane Brody on the personal health column. And she's talking about treatment, dealing with people who families who seek treatment for somebody who's got a terminal cancer diagnosis, as opposed to having them just live their life the way they want it. She writes, "I also now realize that how people spend their remaining days should be a personal decision based on sound medical advice and free from other people's influence," which is a sentence that really resonated in light of what you're talking about in the cafes. Do you see this idea of this is my life, I really want this choice, I don't want to be told what to do or how to do it, I want to plan my own death, I want to be free of any encumbrances? Do you see this? And following up on that, how many of the people have in the cafes talked to you about the fact that they have made their plans, have an advanced directive, have their durable power of attorney, have a pulse form, have gone through all the legal ramifications of this?
It's increasing. I think that we are on the edge of a movement back towards doing those things. And understanding that that's a part of, but again, you know, this is also cultural. I know that there's currently, I believe, a movie that's just been released, a quasi-documentary about a Chinese family where the grandmother
is.
And they're withholding the information from grandma because culturally, that's not what we do. And the conflict that the granddaughter is having about withholding that information and being able to offer proper goodbyes and figure out how to move forward and have her be conscious and participating in that legacy that she'll be bequeathing.
Right. That goes to what Simcha was talking about before, the idea that in these death cafes, you're exposed to multicultural experiences. And that person sitting there may not be I may do things, but there's imagine in the conversation, a mutual respect for various cultures. But so to get back to-
I want to answer your question.
Yeah,
some more than others. Some more than others. There's somebody who comes to Death Cafe who has a business helping people plan their funerals.
Right.
There's other person that I had mentioned has done all of her own planning. So I see it. I've certainly seen it in the work I've done with hospice. We're not dealing in the death cafes with a majority of a population who are dealing with encroaching illness at that moment. It's more of a kind of intellectual curiosity. So there's
a what if type of thing?
Well, just an openness, like, hey, let's talk about, let me find out what this death cafe thing is all about. Some people show up with just that. I heard about it. I'm willing to talk about it and find out. But it's part of a growing edge that's pushing the cultural boundaries much more open with regard to conscious dying, conscious funeral preparation. I walk into a room when I do teaching. I say to people, "How many of you have a living will?" And most people have these days. Most people have these
days. And the people that we deal with, the majority of people do, because the education is where. I mean, let's be true. I mean, the education has worked in most of the communities that we deal with. But do you see a lot more people exercising the fact that they want to have their own choice of how they end their life, as opposed to, let's say, a religious tradition telling them what to do or that they can do?
I think that yes, it is an increasing phenomenon. And the idea that I think that actually that's part of the non-denominational aspect mm-hmm. of what this is about, and the power that I can say, look, as a rabbi, as a Jew, I can share with you what our wisdom tradition says and the why that underlies it. Mm-hmm. And then we'll have a Christian or a Muslim or perhaps whatever, someone else whatever. Or whatever, share their views of how they understand this. But this kind of goes to the issue of agency, being able to have a sense that I'm remaining in control over the most personal aspects of myself. And that resonates pretty powerfully for people.
David, you're involved with, you started and you run the Jewish Relationships Initiative. Mm-hmm. It talks a lot Correct. About ethical wills and things like that. Give us the website. How do people get in touch with you?
The easiest way is probably rabbidavidlevin.com. That'll take you right to jewishrelationshipsinitiative.com, which is a lot more to try and write on a keyboard. So the ethical wills are at ethicallegacy.com, and my website on Jewish Relationships Initiative and all those teachings is at jewishrelationshipsinitiative.com or rabbidavidlevin.com.
So for all those websites, so the easiest way to do it is?
Email me at rabbidavidlevin@gmail.com.
And the Da'at Institute, because Simcha, you're involved all over North America with teaching about Jewish views of the afterlife. And you've been here before about the book and some of the other things. But again, let's reiterate, getting in touch with you, one does what?
Well, Da'at is an acronym for Death Awareness Advocacy and Training. And my website is da'atinstitute.net. And through that umbrella of the Da'at Institute, I do teaching, counseling, and writing around not exclusively, but predominantly Jewish death awareness education.
And remind people that the third edition
of Jewish Views of the Afterlife has been published. It's available
all over, as well as the great God Amazon.
That's correct.
But you haven't pitched the movie rights yet, right?
Everything you ever wanted to know about the afterlife, but never had a chance to ask.
I like to see the – well, never mind. Anyway – in the cafes that you've done, and you've been doing this for several years, what's the role of faith?
Somebody? I think that's very personal. I don't think faith.
Does it come up?
Well,
yes, yes. I'm going to jump on that because Simcha said something just before about intellectual curiosity. I do think that there's an emotional and spiritual curiosity which pervades a lot of our conversations as well. Not, am I doing it correctly according to Christian tradition, or am I doing it right according to this other tradition? Yeah. But a sense that there might be something more than just a physical end. And what might that mean? I mean, I think that those are deep existential questions that cut across and do to go to questions of faith, how faith helps support, how faith maybe even is tested. And this is a space where people can come without feeling like they're being judged based on their view.
Right.
It reminds me of somebody who has been to the Death Cafe recently who has this existentialist worldview that human beings are lousy, the world is in terrible condition, and then you're going to die and it sucks.
She's a real optimist.
And this person
she could be watching the news every day.
Grew up in a secular home, so has no faith system or system that provides meaning. And I'm diametrically opposed, and I find it very difficult to converse with such a person and not lay on a kind of external trip. I mean, when it, one of the guidelines of the Death Cafe is no missionizing to right, other people. Right. And so in a way, David's right. There is an element of faith in there. And most people actually think about it. A lot of people have it. But you don't have to have it to participate in Death Cafe.
No, I know. I just was it, given the fact that the subject is so deeply personal, I would imagine that in the course of the conversations, either in the larger group or in these small groups as you break out, that some sense, not on a denominational level, but on a personal level, as David is alluding to, about the idea of I have faith in, or I have no faith, or I have seen for somebody the recently that the faith that I had helped support me during this moment. That's why I'm, as opposed to just having it in an intellectual conversation.
Right. Well, death pushes the envelope with regard to what do you really believe.
Right.
It does. And even this individual that Simcha is referencing, I've had conversations with similar people over the course of the years that we've been doing this, watching and hearing the people around that table respond to that person, a person who's struggling with, you know, what is the meaning of it all and there is no meaning, kind of an idea, and railing against that. Watching people trying to be empathetic, watching people trying to share their own views to give them a sense that maybe there is something going on, even to the point of, I remember a specific conversation at this moment where somebody basically said, look, we're here for you now. That's got to count for something. And you're here trying to share this with us. That means there is something deeper that you're trying to connect with. And that became a fascinating moment where people were trying to build bridges to each other.
Did you undergo any orientation training? I'm sure you've been asked this, to do this, to facilitate a death cafe. Was there some meeting that you attended or manual that you had to read, or is just this organically emerged? This is something that we'd like to do. Let's go trot it out and try and do it.
So here's how it started for me. Someone sent to me an article, I believe it was in the New York Times, that this Death Cafe was going on. And at that point, there was a colleague of mine who was doing funeral advocacy for people. And I told her about it. And she said, oh, great, let's start one. And I said, I don't know, I've never ever been to one. She said, well, let's go to one. So we tracked down one in Manhattan. And it turned out, so we went into Manhattan the first time. And it turned out there had been another article in the New York Times that week. So there were 75 people wow. at Au Bon Pain in Lower Manhattan, and it was fascinating to me. I like to describe it like this. If I imagine turning down the volume and looking around the room and seeing all these people in animated conversations, you'd have no idea that they were talking about dying and death. And so having seen one, Rachel and I then checked out the website. We got the information that we needed, because the website will actually provide you the paradigm of what you need to go into right, the group. Right. And we set up the first one. So that was the only training. It was a certain amount of chutzpah and a willingness to learn. And then when David had attended a few, I believe, and I asked you
to invited me to come over, and I was intrigued at the idea. What I read about it was made it even more compelling. And Simcha brought me in, and I spent, I guess, the first 6 months just listening and participating in the group and just finding it increasingly cool. Because you're right, the kinds of conversations, we laugh, we cry, we have important, serious conversations, we have silly conversations. It's really animated, always different.
And there's a minimal amount of administration that it requires. David now handles the meetup website. We basically go in and hand out a little starter sheet, and we just need to reserve the tables. We just need to go in early enough and get the tables. But at the Barnes & Noble, there's already access to food and drink. Right, the at the library, there's none.
Right. But I reserved a conference room because it's great meeting space. So it's Death Cafe, Sound Cafe. What can you do?
If somebody's listening to this outside of let's say obviously Philly, and they don't, they want to find out more about it, or if there's one in their town. What's the, where do they go? Is there a web, what's the website that they could track down and say, well, I'm living in Altoona.
Yeah. If they actually go to Google Death Cafe,
right,
they will find, I think, a site called deathcafe.com, and, or they could go to Meetup and type in Death Cafe, or go to Facebook and type in Death Cafe.
Or just ask it's Reb Google.
Just ask Reb Google. It's probably the easiest way to do it.
Well, she knows everything, so or most everything. Before I start running out of time, this thought occurred to me, given that we're heavily into the 21st century now, and this Death Cafe is very personal. You're in touch, you're seeing people, you're in touch with people. Has anybody tried to do this electronically?
As a matter of fact, we're thinking about doing a Death Cafe through Facebook Live via chat. We haven't actually done it yet, but David and I and Michelle Lasota, who is our other co-host, we sort of want to try to pioneer that and see how that would work. I imagine some other people might have done that.
It seems to be obvious somebody would have gone on Zoom or scheduled a, you know, Skype or Zoom or Facebook Live, whatever it's called.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of other people do it. The guy who's been very involved in the North American movement has done a couple of them. I think it's great. We've become associated in some ways as the public face. I think Simcha and I come to this with a certain amount of openness. You know, we make no apologies for where we come from faith-wise. But I think we're both exceptionally open to the idea that it's an opening to truth, not the truth, and inviting conversations and welcoming other views. So I think between Michelle, Simcha, and I, we could actually have a really interesting conversation just amongst the three of us, as we mm-hmm. tend to do, and then post it online as a live Facebook chat, inviting people to come and participate.
Before we start running out, we are running out of time, but before we end this, the easy question, the softball question, give me for each of your perspectives, what's the one thing that you have learned most, that's touched you the most in doing these?
Well, I want to say this as a way of kind of coming in for a landing with this, just associating with your last piece with David. I think there's some inherent Jewish values that underlie this Death Cafe. Even though it is non-sectarian, I think there's a certain kind of acceptance of the reality of death traditionally in Judaism, not in the Americanized Judaism that was influenced by kind of being embedded within Protestant America.
Right.
But there's our Jewish practices, the way, the simplicity in burial, the immediacy of burial, not glorifying death, I think is part of that openness with mm-hmm. regard to dying and death that really our Shiva practice. It's like an extended Shiva, mm-hmm. you know, the Death Cafe. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's one thing that I extract when I step back for a second and see what it is that we're doing. And it certainly resonates with my understanding of Jewish values with regard to dying and death.
Yeah, it certainly does align Jewishly, no question about it. For me, to go back to one of the premises that I use in the ethical will, people are seeking meaning in their lives, and they also do not want to be alone. And those two drivers of the human condition help people to want to seek answers to questions like this, profound questions of meaning. And how do I find community? How do I find that I'm not alone in the universe here? So Death Cafe is an extraordinary opportunity to actually create bridges into that space and make people feel as though there's something special in their lives, in their journey, and in the connection to other people.
So, yeah. Simcha.
My aunt says everyone has their expiry date tattooed on their body. She says, mine is on my ass. I can't see it, and I don't worry about it.
That's a midrash, right?
Right. Well, the midrash is, I said to her, Auntie Rose. Yes,
it's in Tuchus.
It's a good thing, because if you could see your ass from behind, you would drop dead.
This is probably not going to make it on the air.
You never know. You never know. You never know. Speaking of things that come out of this and the Death Cafe, have you had a lot of conversation about people now wanting to take more control of their own funerals? As opposed to saying, oh, you do it, here's a stock funeral, but this is what I want. I mean, this is
it's
part of the whole restructuring, the burial, the green burial, the human.
Isn't your co-host the person who does the on the main line?
One of the folks that is one of the co-facilitators that works with us on the main line does that, helps people figure out what they want to do for their funerals. And I think it's generally positive. I also think if you were to ask our friends who are in the funeral business, they will tell you that there's been a marked shift away from the traditional Jewish funeral. And people are still looking to make something meaningful. But that idea, what that means, has shifted radically for a large segment of our population.
Rabbi Simcha Raphael, the founder and director of the Da'at Institute. Again, real fast website.
Daat Institute.net.
And Rabbi David Levin, founder and director of the Jewish Relationships Initiatives website. Again, David?
Let's go with RabbiDavidLevin.com.
Thank you guys for just walking us through the beginning, the Aleph Bet of the Death Cafe's continued success with this. Thank you very much.
And, thank you.
It's really exciting stuff, and hopefully it will spread. To all of you, thank you for listening to today's edition of Secrets of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. And again, we welcome your comments and suggestions to me, Rabbi Address at JewishSacredAging.com, and also invite you to visit our Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. And we appreciate your continued support of our work. And if you'd like to make a tax-exempt donation to help further the work of the Jewish Sacred Aging program and these Secrets of Meaning podcasts, we invite you to go to our website, JewishSacredAging.com, and click on the donate icon at the top of the page. And we greatly appreciate your support. Secrets of Meaning is recorded at the studios of Bubek and Global Media here in beautiful Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And we thank our producer, Steve Lubeck. And again, thank you for listening. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address, and I look forward to greeting you on our next Secrets of Meaning. To all of you, Shalom.